All right, Rob, thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate you.
My pleasure. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. So could we start just by sharing a bit about your journey into the automotive culture and what initially drew you to the car culture? Because that's something I'm really fascinated about.
Right. Well, we're gonna fill up the 45-minute segment then.
Let's do it.
Well, I'll try to summarize. Well, I'm originally from Canada, Vancouver, Canada, and I grew up with a father that was quite into cars, and I'm one of those people that was fortunate enough to grow up racing. So I grew up racing go-karts, and my father also had a car stereo and car stereo installation business. So as a kid and teenager, I would help put stereo systems in cars that had running wires and stuff. So I just grew up around a lot of custom street machines that were coming through the shop, getting stereos installed. And that really cemented a love of cars, whether it was building model cars, having a slot car track. Later on, we had to stop because go-karting got too expensive because we're, a lower middle-class family. And then I got into RC cars. But it was always part and parcel with my identity. I had a car that I was working on even before I had my license. And that kind of got set aside when I went to art school. I got distracted running around with cameras and attempted to have a career in music videos, which was a bit of a stop-start situation. Did a few okay pieces, but it maybe wasn't quite the right career for me. Though, yeah, that was 10 years of struggle. But I then transitioned into video games. My music video career was failing. I just couldn't get any work, and I was living in London and just completely broke and miserable, making title sequences for banks. It was not going very well. And to cheer myself up, I started PC gaming, and I got into modding, taking existing video games and recreating them. So I got into modding EA's F1 PC games that were around at the time and making them into sports car games. And because I already had a little bit of a media career, I put together a team, and we'd make these fairly in-depth mods. We'd have our own music interfaces, and that they became well known. And then suddenly overnight, myself and half of our mod team got hired by a game studio to produce a game. And that immediately launched me into producing video games. Of course, I had no idea what I was doing, but after a while I got like a mid-level job at EA, moved back to my native Vancouver, Canada, where it turned out they were making Need for Speed. And I kind of view that as going back to college, just learning how to do things. And being in a big team kind of forced me to grow up, get out of being this sensitive, quiet little artist person. And but that was like a mix of my creative talent and capacity with cars and technology, So that kind of led into some of the bosses at Need for Speed. This is the heyday of Need for Speed, like Most Wanted,
Classic.
Carbon. And at the time, we could do no wrong. Like, we were making EA so much money that they just let us do whatever we wanted. So the bosses got this idea that we're going to make a website about cars and car culture, and they decided I should run it. And that was called Speed Hunters, which we launched in 2008. And that allowed me to travel the world and put together a team of photographers. Some of them are doing very well now as content creators. And we got involved with scenes all over the world. We had our own drifting team, our own GT3 team, and things kind of went from there. So that was my introduction into cars and car culture. It was through, one, my childhood passion, but two, taking my creative skill and applying that into racing games. So kind of combining my authentic passion with my skills. So it all kind of goes from there.
No, that's super fascinating because I was very curious about your background, but you seem to have been at the intersection of car culture, digital media culture, video games, fashion, pretty much everything that I love. So I guess continuing with that theme, what brought you then to race service? Because that is where you are currently. I'd like to hear about that connecting bridge from where you were to where you are.
Well, if you look at the founders of Race Service, look at their history, they've all been in the scene that I was describing. A lot of them were around Formula D and drifting and different parts of motorsport. And that's how we all met. We'd all met probably 10 years before the start of Race Service, doing different capacities. One of the founders, James Kirkham, was at GoPro, and he was in charge of the motorsports division. And then another one of the founders, Jacob Agajanian, was a manager of different professional drifters. And at the time I was at EA, we were sponsoring a few of these people and collaborating with a few of them with Speed Hunters. And EA was a sponsor of Formula D. So we were in the same community. And we always kept in touch. Later on, James and Jacob and Andy, they all were doing Donut Media. And by then I was doing Project Cars. And I became one of their clients, right? I had them produce some trailers as we were launching Project Cars 2 in 2017. And we had them also make some documentary films and different promotional films and things like that. So we all were working together in different capacities. They went on to found Race Service. And at the time that they were conceptualizing Race Service, I was at Roborace. I was the deputy CEO of Roborace at the time, so more doing autonomous racing and stuff like that. And I would just go over there and help them conceptualize. So I was around then, but I helped them a little bit, came up with some of the strategies, and then when my gig at Roborace ended, it just made sense to jump ship and join Race Service. That's a good 5, 6 years ago.
Okay, so let's speak to that because I think, the title of creative director, I mean, that's something that's been ambiguous to a lot of people, but I really want to put
Oh
people
my God,
on.
everyone and their dog is a creative director these days.
It's true.
But
And
I'm almost
I know.
embarrassed to say that it's my field, but it is.
So maybe you can go over the nuances of it because it's true. I mean, it's played out and there's a lot of ambiguity, but I think it speaks to a generalized creative at every level, professional and not. But if you could give me your take on that, I'd love to hear it.
I sometimes feel critical when sometimes people declare that they're creative directors, because I
Sure.
think some people believe that if you have ideas and you can stand there and point at things and say, oh, we should do this, we should do that. And you want to talk to a photographer that's doing something, or you want to talk to someone that's holding a video camera, then you're a creative director. But I believe that it is a discipline unto itself. For one, my thought is that you should have domain expertise in quite a few areas. So you should really understand the nuances of, say, filmmaking and be maybe experienced at filmmaking and understand how it works. Or you should be understand the nuances of brand strategy and really understand how the function, purpose, and how positioning works, consumer mindset, all that type of stuff that more maybe goes up through the marketing, the marketing trajectory. What I studied in art school was called new media. So I worked in animation, film, video, electronic music, multidisciplinary. And that kind of has determined a lot of aspects of my career because I understand how the production works from electronic music composition to 3D animation to video game programming to brand strategy, writing, and of course filmmaking, having been a professional filmmaker for 20 plus years. So I believe that a real creative director has domain expertise in a lot of different areas and is able to interface with those creators, if we're using a more modern word, a creator or someone that is going to be implementing a specific medium, whether it's audio, graphic design, typography, interactivity, web design, filmmaking, brand development, all these things. you should understand a wide variety of areas and be able to direct those creatives and manage creatives. The other big skill set I think is a requirement of a creative director, a real creative director, is the ability to make a strategy and a deck. You have to be able to write, you have to be able to strategize and make very, very good presentations that can be shown to different types of clients, whether you're in marketing or brand development or some other area, collabs, and then be able to execute a program that touches on different media. So in my mind, that is it. It has to be much more than someone who has ideas.
No, I totally agree.
That's my critique. Oh, I have ideas. I'm a creative director.
No, you're right. And it's so easy to point and critique and criticize. But, you know, so few people will take on the initiative to execute. It's all execution, as you said. And I think, you have a very profound voice in this. So going into these creative projects, okay, here's where it gets really interesting, because Race Service, I first came across Race Service, I want to say back in 2019, I had the pleasure of going by the office for some car related events. And I was like, this is awesome. I think this was around the time the next generation Supra was coming out, just coincidentally, just to give you an idea of the time frame. Let's talk about the projects you've been involved with at Race Service. And I'd like to begin with Acronym, because I'm a huge fashion guy. So I have to start there and then we can kind of go through it.
Love Acronym.
Yes.
A bit obsessed, a bit of otaku for Acronym. Well, my history with Acronym goes back a long way, because I'm a childhood friend of the co-founder, Errolson Hugh. I've known him since I was two.
Wow.
Our parents were friends before we were born. So I've been in and around his development as a person and a creative since the beginning. And the same goes for his influence on me and my life, and his parents' influence on me and my life has been truly profound. I don't think I would be sitting here talking to you if I wasn't involved in some ways with someone I kind of consider to be my brother, because I've known him my whole life. But on a professional level, we started working together. You know, it can be a little challenging to work with your closest friends. It can go horribly wrong, but in this case, it seems like it's going well. We started working together when I was at RoboRace in 2018. If you're familiar with RoboRace, right, there's RoboCar, which is this completely crazy autonomous vehicle designed by Daniel Simon. Super futuristic stuff.
No, but it sounds amazing.
So Errolson thought it was great, and we had involved him with a program that we did in Berlin where we had him drive one of the cars, and his teammate was an AI that drove the car, and then we had a content creator drive another car, and they raced. And so it was a pretty interesting program. But after that, we started talking about what other collaborations could we do. And around that time, he was approached by Hypebeast, and they're putting together Hypefest, which is a one-off event that they did in New York, in Brooklyn. And we decided to do a capsule collection, a VR experience, a little model of the RoboCar, and a reskin of RoboCar. So that was kind of a test collaboration. And while we were there, interestingly, we were approached by ASUS, Republic of Gamers. The representative was there and started chatting with us. And around 6 or 7 months later was when I joined Race Service. And it was around then that we started talking to Republic of Gamers. And we created a bit of an informal relationship between Race Service and Acronym, where Race Service would manage non-apparel-based collabs for Acronym. Because Errolson is so busy. You know, he's got basically a permanent startup going there. And it just takes so much effort to produce these high-tech clothes. You know, the Acronym clothes are very, very challenging to manufacture. So he's got his hands full. So what we tried to do is create a crack squad that could come together, that he would guide us and he would oversee us and inject his vision into it. And then we would go on and produce programs. So the main project that we did for the past 4 years. It finished mid last year, was the Republic of Gamers collab, where Republic of Gamers did a program with Acronym to produce two computers, two gaming computers. And then in and around this, we did all sorts of experimental content, media. We produced alternative reality games that people could participate in. We commissioned, I think, 50 artists around the world to make content. We did different capsule collections, all sorts of different things. But anchoring that was two different computers, the RMT01 and the RMT02 computers. So that was the main thing. But we've done numerous other collabs, which I basically manage on behalf of us. And we did an AR program with High Sobiety called Berlin Berlin. We did one-off hand-painted bear brick program. And there's numerous other new things that we've been up to. We did some this experimental electric Porsche 935, the Mobix with Bizimoto. So it's a tremendous opportunity. I feel so grateful that I get to work with Acronym because I just love the stuff. I have a life where it's Acronym all day, every day. So that's a big part of my day-to-day at Ray Service is as a creative agency, working with Acronym as a client, you could say.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I absolutely love Acronym. I'm curious as to what some of the other collaborations you're working on currently with Ray Service or independently, and maybe some things that are upcoming that you would like to tease, if you can talk about them.
Well, one of the projects that we did was working with McLaren Automotive, and we've worked with them off and on over the years. We did a few different films with them, and then we did a capsule collection with them. Now, it's worth noting that Ray Service, of course, there's people running around media projects, pointing them at cars all the time. But it's also worth noting that Ray Service is a bit of a streetwear brand in itself, and we do different clothing programs. For example, we did a big program with Porsche last year, where we did a capsule collection that was on sale in their Stuttgart brand store. So the McLaren program was a lot of fun. But the main other thing that I do at Ray Service is, and something also dear to my heart, is working with Hot Wheels.
Okay.
Because I'm a bit of a Hot Wheels collector, and the little kid in me and the car culture fan gets to fully realize a passion by collecting these things. But I do get to work with them. So we started out by doing different collaboration projects. We are involved with their Legend Store, doing live streams, content for it. But 2 years ago, we started working with them, doing more strategy. They came up with a program where they wanted to find a way to bring more adult collectors into the mix because they have a lot of product which are focused for adults. They're not meant to be played with. They're beautiful collectibles. So we're quite involved with that, that side of things with them. That can include films. It can include managing different types of, I hate this word, influencers. Automotive personalities, content creators,
Sure.
and making all sorts of media and film projects with them. So that's the other big thing that I do. But I have all sorts of numerous other projects that are all starting up, but it's a little bit too early to talk about them right now.
Of course. So let's shift gears a little bit because you brought up an interesting point, and that is obviously the intersection of fashion and automotive. Rewind the clock to 2019, before the lockdowns, I had an interesting task in that I was tasked with redesigning all of Honda's merchandise, and I was going to be doing a collaboration with them regarding the Civic Type R at the time. And in those 4 years since then, and of course, with the shutdowns, that was going to be a non-starter, and things have changed so much since then. And that brings me to my question. How has automotive culture just shifted, even looking from the time when you were immersed in it, and even in the past 4 years or 3 years, 4 years, because it has changed so much. And I'm trying to kind of wrap my head around the way the auto culture is going, but the way that it's interfacing with, of course, streetwear and these other creative fields. And I think you'd be perfect to ask.
Well, I find it interesting. When I first started going to automotive culture events in the U.S., I started going to drifting events in around 2006 or so. When you go to these events and you looked at the crowd, say you went to Ferndale Speedway, like one of the D1 events, 2006, 2007, you see the people had streetwear on.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. The people had a look, a vibe. And
exactly.
Then I would go to the similar types of events in Europe, and that would not be the case at all. Mm. And the interesting thing is that as the years went by, I stopped doing Speed Hunters in 2014. If you went to an event, say in Australia, you went to a drifting event in Japan, I'd say, actually, if you went to a drifting event in Japan, everyone has their vibe as well.
Sure.
Obviously. But I remember that things started shifting. And if you go to any automotive event, practically anywhere, people have their style, their curation of themselves is done in tandem with the curation of a modified car, custom car that they may have. And this is a shift that I noticed in the 2010s starting to happen, that as their social media, as the internet became a place unto itself, we found that there were cultural elements that just started cross-pollinating together. And then the boundaries between streetwear, fashion, even the notion of personal curation or lifestyle. If you think of someone that, say, go back a couple decades and you had someone that's a punk, someone that's in the metal, someone that's into hip hop, like that would include an identity, a way to dress and present yourself, right? But that was never really linked to cars.
Exactly.
But now those boundaries have completely gone. And we've seen in the past 10 to 15 years, probably even stronger in the last 10 years, where personal curation is everything. Style, personal style is everything, especially as everyone now is thinking of, has become very image-led, right? As we point the camera on ourselves, people are seeing images of themselves like never before at any other point in history. If you go back 25, 30, 40 years, you probably wouldn't see that many images of yourself, right? And now you're inundated with images of yourself. So people are thinking of the integration of style and design in their day-to-day lives. So if you look at automotive as a thing or motorsports as a thing, and you could even look at one of the main theses of Race Service is that we as a creative agency or a group of people that are working in different aspects of creative fields, especially content creation, one of our specialties is taking automotive and motorsports and then connecting that to different aspects of popular culture, you can say pop culture or contemporary culture. So it's beyond also fashion and streetwear. If you look at music, design, art, especially pop art, gaming, all of these aspects are interconnected with automotive now. And you can see another trend where you can see the utilization of cars in music videos and their relationship with pop stars. They appear quite a lot now as elements of culture that are there, that are everywhere. And this is definitely something that's newer, that if you look in the past, there would have been more silos, you know, like major separations mm-hmm. between automotive and any other aspects of contemporary culture. So it's an exciting time, definitely.
Well, it is an exciting time, but I have to ask the kind of obligatory question, because obviously tuner culture, to your point, has lent itself to having such an individual identity. And I can even recall when I was a kid, you know, blasting death metal and being a post-hardcore scene kid and meshing that with my IS-300, which was tuned out. There weren't many people who combined, to your point, the art and the car passion together. So it was always my friends in the tuner scene, my friends in the art scene. Okay. The point being, this shift has started to occur whereby there's an amalgam now, but here you come with technology and the electric car and the rise of maybe a lack of car ownership amongst young people. How do you see that coming in to your profession, and does it pose any sort of competition at all?
Well, you could look at the consensus in the automotive industry, say 2017, 2018, and motorsports. The consensus was, one, that racing was dying, and two, the automotive world was dying as well. So we can look back on, if we look at this through the lens of demographics, right? You can see that teenagers of previous generations would have viewed the automobile as an autonomous zone. It's their first autonomous zone away from parents, away from the household, where they have total independence. They can do what they want. The automobile no longer has that role. Now the phone has that role, the smartphone, social media networks, et cetera. Discords, whatever you want to say, right? Those networks and platforms are an independent zone. So the car is not needed in that respect. So the car in the role of the teenager, that role has ended. So there was a period of time where it really felt like doomsday for the automotive industry, motorsports in particular. And yeah, you also have to ask the question, do we really need so many cars in the world?
Okay.
You know, like, that's a whole other thing. But it really appears that the car as an object of culture still can exist. You can ask the question, is it really needed as a mass transportation device? But if you just take away the car as transportation appliance, and we just set that aside, and we just look at it as an object of passion for enthusiasts, it really appears that that aspect is very healthy, and that there's still a huge amount of enthusiast cars being produced, especially if you look at Toyota, right? They have some really fantastic enthusiast cars. Or if you look at the Mazda Miata, there are entry-level vehicles that are still satisfying the needs of enthusiasts. And I'm personally not feeling bad about electric vehicles and their potential role. What my sister-in-law just got a Ioniq 6, and I was really pushing her to get it because I really believe it's just a stunning vehicle. It just looks so cool. And you can still have passion for these things. It doesn't really matter that you it's run by electricity. They still can be amazing objects. And custom car culture that are not about going fast. Think of lowriders, think of custom cars, think of classic cars. You know, classic cars generally go pretty slow.
Yes.
So I don't think it always has to be about the notion of having a high performance race car for the street. That's not always needed. It can be a beautiful design object, and then you can customize from there. So
I agree.
I see that things are looking good for enthusiasts anyway.
I totally agree.
Setting aside the notion of transportation appliance, that's another subject.
Well, no, I like the way you illustrated that dichotomy, because you articulated it in a way that really resonated with me, and just on a level of somebody who loves 2000s Y2K tuner car culture, I'm glad that it still has a place as objects of art and will continue going forward.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. The Type R, all sorts of fantastic stuff. My daily is a Cayman. You know, more basic Cayman, although I've been modifying it. I'm looking, I can see it out the window there. And I've been modifying it and styling it. And my sense of aesthetics, you know, the way I live is I love design, and I try and integrate design into all aspects of everything I do. Then that, of course, includes my vehicle, but also my home, et cetera. So I always have to stylize and customize everything.
Well, let's expand on that a little bit because I'm very curious. Tell me some of your favorite passions as it pertains to how you stylize your life, because I think that is obviously something you don't turn off. I mean, when you're hyper creative, you know, you're always thinking about that. Speak to me a little bit about your car, how you've tuned your car, both visually and performance wise, and then we can speak to some of the other attributes of your lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, I have two cars. I have a Porsche 935 replica. It's built on a 1970 and that thing is completely psychotic. Someone said this to me last week. They said that owning a classic car is a bit like owning a horse. And not that I've ever owned a horse, but it probably is quite involved, and it's this object, or in this case, an animal, that you have to really take care of.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely occupies a lot of space and expense. So I have that, and that's a bit of a creative project. It's an art project. I collaborate with different graphic designers and artists that they keep redoing the exterior. And even in t-shirts, and we're planning a whole art program around that thing. So I have that, and then I have a 2019 Porsche Cayman S, which I'm doing as a, I can't help it. Everything I do has to become a creative project. So this is a program where I'm taking a more basic, I keep looking at it because it's out the window there. It's a more basic entry level Porsche, a newish Porsche, but I'm learning how to track it. And when I moved to SoCal a few years ago, I moved here with my classic Porsche and I thought I'd be taking it out to cars and coffee and becoming friends with it, et cetera. But I find that the thing that I'm really passionate about in terms of participation in automotive culture here locally in the LA area is track days. This is my thing. And so I'm getting back to that childhood passion of driving on racing tracks, and I've been taking a lot of courses, schools, and just learning how to drive this little sports car. And then slowly upgrading it as well. So I've got T37s on it now.
Oh, my favorite wheel. Oh, my God. Yeah. That's
T37 everything. Hashtag. Yes. And then I've got a tech art kit on the front and lowered it. I've got a mobile racing seat in it because, you know, it's the better way to feel what the car is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm planning to just gradually keep upgrading it so it's faster and faster and faster on the racetrack, but still somewhat functional as a streetcar. To see if I can challenge myself to make this more entry-level car as fast as a previous generation 981 GT4.
Okay.
So we'll see if I can do it. So I've kind of laid out a lap time at the local racetrack, Button Willow, to be sub 2 minutes. So that's a project. And of course, I'm making films about the whole thing. And, so that's an ongoing project. So that's my day-to-day, week-to-week expression of car customization and the lifestyle that I live in SoCal as a car enthusiast.
Great. So let's speak to a few other characteristics of how you might stylize your life in that case.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned home, perhaps some things like this. I'd love to hear your thoughts on architecture, your thoughts on interior design, some lesser known qualities of artistic direction. If you could speak to those, I'm curious.
Well, I am fundamentally a creative. I don't consider myself to be an artist per se, but I exist to create, to execute projects. Whether I'm being paid to or not, I must do projects. It's a must. Otherwise, sadness. But I remember I was living in London, and I think it was around the year 2000. And we were invited to a party in London. These older artists, we went to their loft. This guy was a famous sculptor. I didn't know him that well. But I remember going into this loft, and I was in my early 20s then, and just seeing that the entire loft was an expression of this artist's art, the whole thing. And I had never been in a space, even considered that you could live in a space that was a pure expression of your personal aesthetic. And I always remembered that. I was living in a very normal apartment then, and I always laid that out as a goal for myself, that I wanted to live in a space that was an expression of my personal aesthetics. You know, I love I love design, international design. I consider myself to be a modernist. If you look at how I present myself, I very much love technical apparel, really, or race service
Shout out.
clothing.
Of
So
course.
somewhere mixed between the race service clothing and maybe a bit of Avril Lavigne, but I'm very particular about my personal presentation because it's
Yeah.
for me an expression of design as a design fan. Same goes for the cars, an expression of design. And then the home is also a bit more of an expression of design, and maybe personal interests and a celebration of one's life. So I've got a lot of model cars at home. My partner is an adventurer and she loves traveling the world. So she always comes back from the different countries that she visits and with different objects from the culture. So it's also a celebration of her passion for travel. So our home is a big loft space. So we've been able to realize this dream. I love lofts that are maybe in old buildings. It's like a greediness to them, like a big concrete space. And we've been slowly updating it with we did a project with a Japanese architect. For a handcrafted giant shelving unit that has got a mix of design objects. There's some bear bricks up there, a few Acronym shoes on display, our book collections, model cars, different things that just show our passions. It's all there. You can look through everything on this giant shelf and see what we're passionate about. Because we really believe that the passion that you experience as a child, the passion you experience as a teenager, the passion you experience as a young adult, you must keep these things alive. That's very important. And I'd say my partner and I are very focused on keeping our inner teenagers alive. The
Same.
curiosity that you have. So the home is a celebration of that. So there's a mix of mid-century modern furniture. We have some Asian antiques from India and China as well. So interestingly, I love hyper new things, but I also kind of like old things as well. That goes for cars, new cars, old cars, but that also can be for things like furniture as well. And then there is a fairly sizable Hot Wheels collection in there, and there's also a quite large simulation racing rig, virtual reality rig, that's taking up a lot of space, that shows that passion for technology, virtual reality, and immersive experience. And then lastly, there was many, many speakers in it because we just love music and blasting music at all hours.
As it should be. As it should be. Now, that resonates with me a lot. I love how descriptive you were, but also my friends call me a grown teenager, so I totally understand that experience of not much has changed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I see. Well, you're now
And
featured.
I would like to
Yeah.
talk about this. It's an
Please, I would
interesting
like to
one.
hear it.
I've had about five creative careers, and I was someone that was very quiet, had a lot of problems interfacing with people, super shy, and it's really by the skin of my teeth that I managed to decent creative career. I've lived in London, in Stockholm, Amsterdam, Los Angeles, done projects all over the world. Worked with some fantastic brands, and it's gone, reasonably well. But it's been hugely challenging, and I've had to really, really grow and change, and be very conscious about all these things in order to make sure that I could do this. So I've reached a stage in my career now where I've got this mission that I really must give back. I must see if I can help others. Maybe people that are just right on the cusp. I'm lucky that I had very supportive parents, and my mother would take my drawings and enter them into competitions, and I'd always win. And that gave me tremendous confidence in my creative abilities. I didn't have any other confidence, but I knew that. So I'm thankful I had that support at home. But for people that don't have that support, it's maybe they're on a knife edge and it may not happen, and they're going to have to go get that job at Starbucks. Nothing against people that work at Starbucks, but for creatives, you're trying to find a way to work and live and have a decent income from your field of skill. So I would like to take all the lessons that I learned and have conversations with the younger self that I never got, and see if I can help others and spread knowledge about how to go about doing these things. I have a lot of friends that are professional creatives in many different fields, and I love talking to them about how they did what they did. So the first expression of trying to do this thing was Radical Strategies. And I interviewed all my friends about their creative careers. It's a bit of a research project, but in the end, I decided that I'm a really rubbish podcast host. And the main reason I was doing it was so that I could have a voice to convey these things. And if you look at the mission to help young creatives, I didn't think in the end that someone listening to, having to listen to 45 minutes of someone talking about how they did their creative career was the easiest way to distill the principles of what you needed to learn. So I changed format, and that's why at the beginning of January, 1 month ago, I launched a new content program that was taking much of the similar subjects that we were covering with Radical Strategies, but having that in a new format where it's bite-sized bits of knowledge about how to do this, how to have a creative career. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's
not a good podcast host.
Well, that brings up a few key points then, because I want to talk a little bit more about podcasting, but before we do, let's talk about mentorship and community. Role of mentorship in your career and how you foster community within the automotive and creative industries. Let's kind of speak to that a little bit.
Well, as I've gone through my creative career, I've always sought out having mentors, and maybe I never said, will you be my mentor? And they'd be, yes, I will show you the way. But I never did that, but I'd always have these friendships with people that were much further along than me. When I was in art school, I would hang out with the teachers all the time and go for lunch with them, and I would just pick up things. And when I was a young music video director, I had a very successful commercials director that would chat with me sometimes, and sometimes he'd be very critical as to how I was doing things. I was very competitive, and he didn't like that. He thought I should be cooperative, and he helped me. And that I've always done that. I've always had people that were much, much further along than me that I would spend time with, usually have meals with them, and they would give me their thoughts. That maybe became more formalized when I was at EA on Need for Speed, because the bosses there were definitely actively trying to help me. I guess they saw that I had some potential. One of my mentors, I released a video today actually talking about this. One of my mentors just decided I needed to start public speaking, and he just forced me to start giving presentations to the entire Need for Speed team, 100 people. And you're very nervous, but I find that if you're really excited by the thing you're talking about, you forget that there's people in front of you. You just get excited about the cool creative projects that you're doing, and you want to communicate that, and that would override things. So mentorship is very, very important, and I certainly wouldn't be here without all the different people that have given me their time. And sometimes really stopped me and said, what are you doing? You can't do this. Stop doing this. Or just would get irritated with me with my stupidity and immaturity.
Well, understood. Well, I think that's really good advice, because, our audience is very much a mixture of creatives in various capacities. So I think it's very good advice. Before we talk about a few last questions that I have, I want to know about the experience of going on Car Stories, Sung Kang's podcast, because I absolutely, of course, like so many people, adore him as an actor, Han being that iconic character in the Fast Saga. Can you tell me about how that experience came to be and what that experience was like?
The producer of the podcast is a mutual friend of mine, one of the people that I was working with very closely on the last action project. We had quite an in-depth Web3 program, and they were chatting, and I got connected to him. And he really wanted to talk to me about this project. And it also turns out that I'm friends with Amelia Hartford. I've known her and been in and around her career for a long time, like 6 or 7 years, just when she was starting. So the idea was put forward that I could go on the podcast, and yeah, I was invited. It's pretty straightforward, you know. We drove out to Hollywood, and I was shuffled into a room, and then suddenly they appeared, and then we chatted. It was fun. Quite a wide variety of different subjects we covered at the time.
Yeah, no, it was a very fun podcast. I was just very curious about that. So, speaking to the future, because I think this is where this all culminates, let's end this with the future. Where do you see yourself going forward, both in terms of your content strategy you mentioned earlier, post podcast, your new content strategy, and future projects? I would just love to hear you kind of opine on that.
I like that post podcast. Yeah. By the way, just one other point is, I think it's really important to be able to assess your own work. And I did an assessment of Radical Strategies. I don't do anything that's not, it has to be top level.
Of
And I just
course.
assessed it just wasn't very good. So I decided, no, this is just not good enough. We're gonna reformat and take the mission and do something new. And I had to think about it for a year before coming up with the next program. I'm friends with Chris Doe. Do you know Chris Doe?
I do not.
He's an incredible thought leader, teacher, mastermind. And you should definitely follow him and chat with him. He's a
I
brilliant
shall.
person. But he does public speaking, mentorship programs, all sorts of different things where he really teaches people how to run creative businesses. I think he's been shifting more into personal brand. He advises CEOs. And anyway, he's always been a bit of an influence on me more recently as my friendship with him has developed. And it's like I said, you should always have people around you that are much further along. So I was looking at that and seeing how he took his knowledge base and applied that to contribution and helping people. And I thought, well, yeah, I see how he's doing it. Is there space for me? And for a while there, I thought, I'm just not on the level, right? I'll watch something like a Tim Ferriss show, and you see all the experts talking about motivation and all the ways that they should do things. And for a while there, I just didn't necessarily believe that I was on that level. But I soul searched further. I thought, well, what is the thing that I really believe that I have 100% authority to talk about? You know, there's absolutely no doubt. And that is creative careers. I really understand that. And I have, am part of such a large community of people that are doing different things with their careers, their creative careers. And I've spent so much time talking to them as case studies or just as friends supporting each other that I thought, this is something I really can do. So I decided, one, that I needed to be able to take the principles and break them up into little bite-sized segments, 30 seconds, 45 seconds, 1 minute, 2 minutes. And so that people can just get little thoughts. So that's the starting point for it. And the act of creating these films, I write them myself, I shoot them myself, I do everything myself, aside from writing the music. I have a friend that writes the music for them. And the act of making these short films is forcing me to solidify the basic principles of how you could maybe have a collective a body of knowledge that someone could digest. So I think in the future there may be some kind of course you could take. There will be a more formal mentorship program where I can talk to someone. So if someone wants to talk to me for 1 or 2 hours a month, and I check in with them and I see how they're doing and I get feedback and I help them. And I may give feedback on how they need to work on themselves as well, as I've had to completely redevelop who I am in many ways. In some ways, I'm exactly the same teenager. So we're going to figure that out as well. So there's a lot to do. But right now, just releasing these short films is going quite well. And I'm just very passionate about it. I love writing them, and I love putting them together.
Amazing. Well, I'm excited for that. And I think piggybacking off of that, Rod, I think that brings us to our final question, which is a continuation and looking towards the future. What are you most excited about?
Well, this educational program that I've been chatting about, I'm very inspired. And it's just really nice to have something that has been well received. When I did Radical Strategies, it didn't seem to make much of an impact. And I found for all the effort and work that it took to pull that off the ground, that wasn't very inspiring to see. So having something that's resonating, where we seem to have found a niche, helping people start their creative careers, that's very exciting. But there's a few other projects that are getting going here. It's a little bit too early, though. I'm bidding on a few things. But I love being in and around Grace Service. There's just so many projects happening, and it's such a fantastic group of collaborative people. There's a meeting going on right over here. And I don't know what creative projects. It looks like a video game thing. But there's also so many things happening, which is fantastic. On a personal level, I'm really enjoying being focused on track days and learning how to drive, and just having that adrenaline rush of going flat out on the racetrack is really good fun. And then I'm also reinventing the 935X. If you follow at Project 935X, those are my car projects. So the classic car, we're about to redo how it looks. And it's much closer to my personal aesthetic. It's going to be black and white. So I'm really looking forward to reinventing that car. I'm still very surprised that I get to drive this psychotic machine around LA. But it's good fun. Yeah.
Well, that's super sick. Well, Rod, I have to tell you, it's been very insightful. Thank you for spending time, with me today. I really appreciate it. It's been excellent. Thank you so much.
Okay. Cheers.